se hacen al 5%. Eso haría que 250 mil personas perdieran su trabajo. Si el programa se recorta por 15%, ese es un valor de 748 mil personas que perderían el trabajo y el doble de las personas que reciben el cuidado médico que Medicare puede proveer. Así que eso va a afectar a bastante gente.
¿Y la gente que ya no va a poder recibir ese cuidado médico va a vivir de milagros?
Eso es lo que estamos tratando de evitar.
A lo mejor se van a morir más pronto, ¿verdad?
Pues si no tienen los recursos médicos o no tienen lo que necesitan para ir al doctor, claro que su salud médica va a ser afectada drásticamente.
¿Se va a morir más pronto que lo que iba a durar? ¿Van a durar menos años en este mundo?
Es una posibilidad, sí, claro.
Casi le va a pasar lo mismo que los inditos que mataron el día Thanksgiving, ¿eh?
Lo más importante que queremos decir hoy es que esos recortes a Medicare van a afectar a millones de personas en el país y personas que realmente necesitan cuidado médico, que no tienen de otra manera de poder ir al doctor, de poder quedarse en casa, de poder que una persona de la casa los pueda cuidar y que también ellos tengan trabajo. Eso es lo más importante que tenemos que tomar de todo esto.
Entonces, ¿qué le dices tú a las personas que escuchan nuestro programa?
Bueno, es muy importante que la audiencia ahorita que está escuchando este mensaje entienda que hay gente en los Estados Unidos que está en el lugar de poder afectar cambio. Y lo más importante es decidir y actualmente hacer algo, sea una protesta o llevando el cambio a un voto o poder afectar en cambiarle la mentalidad a un líder político que tiene poder. Lo más importante es tener el valor de decir, yo voy a hacer algo y lo estoy haciendo, voy a tratar de hacer un cambio en mi comunidad.
Era Wendy Carrillo, directora de comunicaciones de la Unión de Trabajadores del Cuidado de la Salud a Largo Plazo, una entidad afiliada al Sindicato Internacional de Empleados de Servicios en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
Puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
Con llamados al presidente Obama para que ordene el cierre de la escuela de asesinos y poner fin a la militarización en el mundo, miles de activistas de Estados Unidos y sobrevivientes de la represión en Latinoamérica arribarán a la base militar en Benning, Georgia, el fin de semana. Se trata de la jornada anual de protesta contra la Escuela de las Américas. El ahora conocido Instituto de Seguridad y Cooperación para el Hemisferio Occidental fue fundado por Estados Unidos en Panamá en 1946 bajo el nombre de Escuela de las Américas. Allí fue conocida como Escuela de los Asesinos o Escuela de los Golpes porque los militares latinoamericanos entrenados en ella cometieron matanzas o lideraron golpes militares de regreso en sus países. Nico Udugama es organizador de la campaña para cerrar la Escuela de los Asesinos.
Fue creado en el 1946 en Panamá y en el 83 los panameños echaron la escuela de su territorio nacional diciendo que fue la base de desestabilización más grande de América Latina, ¿no? Y lo transfirieron a Fort Benning en Georgia. Nosotros entendemos que a través de mucha investigación sabemos que hay mucha gente que lideraron golpes en el pasado, que fueron en las guerras de El Salvador, en Guatemala, en la Junta Militar de Argentina, Chile, mucha gente que lideraron esos regímenes opresivos, represivos, fueron entrenados en la escuela. Actualmente entendemos que los graduados siguen dejando un camino muy sangriento por América Latina. En 2009, graduados de la Escuela de las Américas lideraron un golpe de Estado contra el gobierno de Manuel Zelaya en Honduras. Asimismo, en Venezuela, en 2002, el golpe de Estado frustrado, digamos, contra ese pueblo, fue liderado por graduados de la Escuela de las Américas. También cabe decir que, por ejemplo, el legado de las escuadrones de la muerte sigue azotando a América Latina. En México, por ejemplo, los carteles de droga, por ejemplo, entendemos que el cartel de drogas de los Zetas, un tercio de los miembros originarios de los Zetas fueron entrenados en la Escuela de las Américas, ¿no? Entonces nosotros estamos viendo claramente ese vínculo entre el entrenamiento y financiamiento de los Estados Unidos y la violencia en América Latina hoy en día, ¿no? Y es más, nosotros debemos decir que aunque el gobierno estadounidense dice que está promoviendo la democracia y transparencia a través de la Escuela de las Américas, pues en 2001 cambiaron el nombre al WINSEC, y a partir de esa fecha, cuando nosotros averiguamos que instructores de la nueva, entre comillas, nueva escuela, fueron implicados en abusos de derechos humanos, pues el Pentágono decidió, en nombre de democracia y transparencia, retener los nombres de los graduados e instructores para que nosotros no pudiéramos vincular los graduados y los instructores nuevos con violaciones de derechos humanos. Entonces es muy importante saber que lo que están, lo que nosotros, que los ciudadanos y ciudadanas norteamericanos estamos pagando con nuestros impuestos, esta escuela que está dejando violencia, está dejando muerte, tortura y desplazamiento, ¿no?, en América Latina.
El líder del movimiento que exige el cierre de la Escuela de las Américas, el padre Roy Bourgeois, declaró que la Escuela de las Américas suministra el músculo militar necesario para proteger la codicia del 1% de la población.
Muchos de los graduados de esta escuela que han vuelto a sus países a ser líderes de escuadrones de la muerte, a liderar golpes de Estado, asesinatos, tortura, desplazamiento, en fin. Entonces nosotros entendemos que estas prácticas que utilizan los graduados de las Escuelas de las Américas es para proteger ese 1% que son la oligarquía de América Latina y las corporaciones, ¿no? Cuando están intentando implementar estos proyectos económicos neoliberales, hay mucha resistencia de las bases, y eso es el 99%, y pues necesita ese músculo militar que es la Escuela de las Américas para suprimir cualquier protesta social.
En agosto pasado, 69 congresistas de Estados Unidos enviaron una carta al presidente Obama solicitándole cerrar por medio de un decreto ejecutivo el Instituto de Seguridad y Cooperación para el Hemisferio Occidental, donde más de 60.000 militares latinoamericanos han recibido entrenamiento. Hasta el momento, el presidente Obama no se ha pronunciado al respecto. Detalles de los 3 días de actividades en Georgia para exigir el cierre de la Escuela de las Américas pueden encontrarse en soawatch.org. Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Escuche Nuestra Voz, programa de información, análisis y cultura, donde su voz es la que cuenta. Todos los jueves a las 9:30 a 11 p.m. aquí, en KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles. Nuestra Voz es parte de APE, Asociación de Programadores y Programadoras en Español de KPFK. Y recuerde, les esperamos todos los jueves a las 9:30 de la noche.
Enseguida escucharán una hora de programación producida desde los estudios de Radio Pacífica en North Hollywood, California, y para todo el mundo. Contragolpe es un programa 100% independiente.
Amigos de Contragolpe, como siempre, todos los miércoles, 9:30 de la noche, me da muchísimo gusto saludarles. La semana pasada tuvimos esta entrevista con Javier.
Santa Cruz, Riff Raffinus, Rebel Radio Around. Welcome to this week's edition of Rust Belt Radio, the Pittsburgh Independent Media Center's biweekly review of the news from the grassroots, news overlooked by the corporate media. On today's show, Occupy Oakland holds a general strike while Occupy Pittsburgh marches in solidarity. The Thomas Merton Center honors Dr. Vandana Shiva, a hero in the fight against corporate piracy. October 22nd, data protests, police brutality, rallies in Market Square. Community group Decarcerate PA organizes against new prison expansion in PA, and more in our local and global headlines. Rust Belt Radio is broadcast live from WRCT Studios every other Monday at 6 p.m. on 88.3 FM in Pittsburgh, and the program airs again on WRCT every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m.
We can also be heard weekly on the following stations: WIUP 90.1 FM in Indiana, WNJR 91.7 FM in Washington, WLRI 93 FM in Eastern Pennsylvania, and FRSC 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz, California. We're also available on the Internet, both on WRCT's live web stream at WRCT.org and for download, stream, or podcast from our website at radio.indypgh.org. We turn now to local stories.
On the evening of October 25th, the occupation of Oakland, California was raided by police, who had come equipped with flashbang grenades, tear gas, rubber bullets, beanbags, shotguns, batons, and tasers. Although the occupation movement as a whole tries to remain nonviolent, hundreds of Oakland protesters resisted intimidation to disperse by the police and city officials, and so violent force was used to combat their civil disobedience. Although all media was likewise coerced to disperse, the raid received national news attention. An Iraq veteran named Scott Olson was hospitalized due to a head injury and the tear gas canister that exploded next to him already down. A soldier returned and hit by a police at home, made for a strong symbol for the occupation of Oakland, fueled the energy of the movement nationally, and to the chagrin of the powers that be, the powers that had been, that energy went into organizing a general strike in peaceful but powerful response to the attack. On Wednesday, November 2nd, the general strike did shut down many banks, including Wells Fargo, Chase, Citibank, Bank of America, and even the Oakland Port. As violence begets violence, the strike and citywide marches lent a venue to the reactionary vandalism of the banks by a few. But the dignity of the general strike was overall collected by the majority, and it's been a historical action, a victory for a historical movement. Across the country, occupation protesters, vets, and students marched, loudly chanting in solidarity through the Oakland neighborhood of Pittsburgh, from Schenley Plaza through Pitt Campus. The Pittsburgh police were not absent from the march, often blocking roads and sounding sirens in response to a provoking few, but the majority of the crowd, whose size paled in comparison to its passion, continued around the police cars. Many marchers waved their peace sign fingers in the windows, and the crowd was left.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM on your dial, freakradio.org, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadside, special guests from Palo Alto's homeless movement, fighting to retain their right to sleep in vehicles. And then at 7:30, a report from Ventura by attorney Jay Lederman, who's also taking a role in defending Santa Cruz activists who are fighting to occupy Santa Cruz and make some real changes. Stay tuned.
There's something that I've always wanted to say to you men. How would you like to hear this warning again and again? Look out, take care, beware. Be careful whatever you do. Watch every move you make, or something will happen to you. Suppose that boys were made of sugar and spice, that girls were snails and puppy dogs tails, and nothing that's nice. We'd turn into women whose needs would be terribly hard to control, and you'd have to dress and behave like prisoners out on parole. Men, watch out, there's dangerous women about. Boys, be
girls are easily roused to passion and lust. You're asking for trouble, waiting alone at night for a bus. She could be the one, Miss Wright, the one you can't live without. She could be one of those ones your daddy warned you about. It could be a friend who threatens your body and life. It could be your teacher, your mother, your lover, your sister, your wife. She's used to the fact that you don't fight back, nor run, nor shout. She's one of the ones your daddy never warned you about. Cover your legs, remember to button your shirt. Or if you're attacked and abused, and take the woman to court. The cops are all women, the judges are women, they'll say you were dressed for sport. The doctors are women, the lawyers are women, they'll say you were asking for it. Each time you open the paper, another man beaten and battered or raped and murdered and dumped in a ditch. And boys and old men, when will it end? Degradation and fear and pain that women inflict on the men. Men, watch out, there's dangerous women about. Boys, beware, there's violent females everywhere. He lives in the shelter in panic and fear. She brags of her conquests while swilling her. Outnumber the dangerous, menacing ones, there's never a doubt. Do they raise their voice to try to find the cause of the cure?
No.
They only say, I'm not one of the dangerous ones for sure. Oh, what a shame, what a tragic disgrace, to have to fear half of the human race.
And that was Anne Feeney from an ancient album, There's a Whole Lot More of Us Than They Think. It's 21 years ago she published that song and sang it. It's on an old cassette. As mentioned before, you're tuned to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I got a couple guests coming in 6:30 and 7:30 by phone. And you can come in, too, by phone if you'd like. There is a call-in number, 831-427-3772, which probably those of you who are listening regularly know all too well. I'm going to begin immediately by playing some tape from Occupy Santa Cruz. Occupy Santa Cruz, for those who have been in the movie theaters or in jail or somewhere else. Actually, probably in jail you would have heard about it, but in Australia? No, they've got it in Australia, too. It's, of course, a movement to reclaim basic civil rights for all of us through economic transformation and recognizing the extreme disparity of wealth that exists in this country and the power that those who are in charge of the wealth-making machine for the wealthy have. It's a kind of a springboard for all kinds of protests that are happening all across the nation today. Most notoriously in New York City, where there's huge demonstrations, or there were a few hours ago on the Brooklyn Bridge, and arrests and protests all over the country, largely peaceful, but the police, of course, don't want people to occupy the public space on the orders of their bureaucratic or political masters at various cities, Seattle, I think Portland, St. Louis, is it Dallas, I believe. A lot of this is being carried on the mainstream media and doesn't really need so much to be emphasized here, though I will try to keep a little bit in touch with it as we go. Occupy Santa Cruz has not been touched in the last couple of days, although They've already gotten 20 or more lodging tickets. That's 20 jury trials, a total of 10 years in jail total for the 20 people who were ticketed, 6 months each as a maximum if they are convicted, plus $1,000 fine each, so that's $20,000. Occupy Santa Cruz has gone to court to transfer the city's "You're a Bunch of Public Nuisances" by protesting and camping near the courthouse. The particular protest focus there is on the San Lorenzo benchlands, which is city property, versus the actual area in front of the courthouse on Water Street, which is county property. And in response, Occupy Santa Cruz, apparently it's now, there was a question about the strategy, whether Occupy Santa Cruz was actually a group in any coherent way, had any representatives. Apparently Ed Fry is, for the purposes of this lawsuit, representing Occupy Santa Cruz in court in response to the attempt to criminalize Occupy Santa Cruz through this civil lawsuit. You might say, well, it's not a crime. Yeah, but they're going to be treated like criminals, driven off the property, and huge fines imposed on people, which, of course, they couldn't pay. And all parks closed, Occupy Santa Cruz, under John Barisoni and the Santa Cruz City Council, under Coonerty and Lane, the injunction that they have sent Barisoni into court to get, in which he was going to get yesterday in court, until Ed Fry, with the assistance of Steve Plage and Jay Letterman and perhaps David Beauvais and Laura Anderson and others, transferred it to federal court, where it may or may not be heard there. That has yet to be determined. I may get in touch with Steve Plage later in the show, or maybe Ed, to ask him what the latest update, ask either of them what the latest update is. One of the things that's happening at Occupy Santa Cruz is they're preparing for more raids, more property seizures, more sign seizures, more tent seizures. And that is occupying, I think, a lot of the attention of the Occupy Santa Cruz folks, although they're perhaps getting used to it, and it's getting a bit more organized out there. I've been sick, so I can't really give a real on-the-spot analysis. And I did do a few interviews today, which I'll be playing. But what I'm going to begin with are some interviews that I took on Monday. That was at the end of a meeting with Vice Mayor Don Lane. A large group of activists, 50 or so, 40 or 50, were meeting with Mayor Don Lane under the facilitatorship of Chris Doyen, or Commander X, as he calls himself. To try to work out problems between the city, or open channels of communication. That's perhaps the most politic way to put it, the most diplomatic way of describing it. I've always been a skeptic of this process, though I don't deny it's a good thing to have city officials and Occupy Santa Cruz activists in communication with each other and expressing concerns to each other. The question, though, is what's the real motivation and agenda on the side of the city? And it's been clear, because the injunction was secretly rammed through the closed session of the city council without any informing the public at all, without even informing them after it was passed, as Vice Mayor Don Lane schmoozed people at the later in that day, last Tuesday before last, at the city council meeting, that the city council has been acting in bad faith for the last couple of weeks. Now Lane shows up at the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly, wants to be taken seriously as a sincere negotiator. He did come back on Monday with the head of Parks and Rec, Danette Shoemaker, but as far as I can see, nothing has substantially been done in terms of, certainly not in terms of withdrawing the injunction. I talked to Lane today briefly. There was another Don Lane, sort of, I call it a schmoozorama, that they had out at Occupy Santa Cruz earlier this afternoon, Thursday, the 17th, that's today, and about seven or eight Occupy activists were kind of almost begging Don Lane, or not begging, that's a little harsh. Let's say they were taking very seriously Lane's directing the whole conversation towards the Occupy getting a permit. I think they're supposed to be presenting something at the General Assembly tonight at 6 o'clock, which is happening even as we speak. And anybody's welcome to go to it, trying to get the General Assembly to agree and consensus on getting a permit from the city, which, of course, was roundly rejected by Occupy Santa Cruz a week and a half ago, because what the city did was they rammed a permit down Occupy Santa Cruz's throat, granted it without being asked it, and imposed a whole series of restrictions. And that resulted in a march to City Council a week ago where activists simply told City Council, this First Amendment is our permit. However, there has been, you know, serious turmoil in terms of the across the country. Police authorities, perhaps coordinated, perhaps not, it's not entirely clear, have, you know, struck back at occupies throughout the country and violently broken them up, or forcefully, with numerous arrests in New York City, in Portland, in Seattle, and in Oakland. And, of course, those occupies, I think the New York City one came back today, although I'm not quite clear how long it stayed back, whether it's still there as I speak. It probably is at Zuccotti Square, or Liberty Square, as they call it there. So anyway, I'm going to begin with a little bit of this Monday session with Lane, which I tape recorded, the end of it. And you're going to hear just sort of, it's more just that people hear how the process is happening. And then some interviews that were happening. At the same time, Lane was schmoozing is too harsh. He was making, he was listening to proposals from the Occupy Santa Cruz group. But he made it very clear that he continued to support the injunction against Occupy Santa Cruz, and he had no explanation for why he was dishonest in not revealing it before it, while it was happening, before it happened, and immediately after it happened. And I continue myself to wonder why people are taking him seriously in any way other than the fact that he has the words vice mayor in front of his name. I guess there has been an agreement to put in porta potties rather than open the city bathrooms, which the city's park bathroom, which should be open. Some have said, well, porta potties would be closer to the campground. That would be more convenient. There already is one porta potty, which activists put in that is now parked on the street. Others they wanted to put in, they were refused permission to do by the city. I know the city has this history of threatening to tow away porta potties that are provided for homeless use or even protester use, if there is a camping issue involved, because thou shalt not camp is sort of the 11th commandment here in Santa Cruz. So let's hear a little of that, and then at 6:30 we're going to have some call-ins from Palo Alto, and of course perhaps your call-ins if you're listening, and then at 7:30 we'll be hearing from Jay Lederman of Ventura, if he does call in.
Can we retake consensus on this subject?
We're going to take one last shot at getting this one through, and then we're going to have to table the rest of it. But can we get a up or down on the proposal that we just had to have the city council, the mayor, take a message saying we don't want this injunction?
I'd sure like to know.
Please don't put
yourself
forward.
And we don't need it. And we're so in trouble.
Okay, everybody who's putting your thumbs down, keep them down so I can count it down.
Ed and the fellow who just spoke eloquently, this is
thumb down. We only got three.
And another.
Many more than 93.
Yeah? Okay. All right, so we can sense in that. Mr. Vice Mayor, do you understand what we're...
Yeah,
what the group
I think
is asking? Okay. Now, at this point, the city has to go, folks. The purpose of this meeting, this particular...
this is Chris Doyen, Commander X speaking, who took the lead in wanting to meet with Don Lane.
Time for a working group amongst ourselves. But at this point, I would like consensus from all of you to table the rest of the agenda items until the next time that we can arrange for the city to join our working group.
No. That is garbage and sanitation was the next thing on the agenda.
Can we not discuss as a group briefly what our needs are so maybe we're more organized and we can better
use
their time?
We can have a working group meeting, but I want to adjourn this one.
Because then we won't spend 50 minutes on one item and we could all become more in agreement.
Well, part of it is we need their input for us to come to a consensus.
Yeah, if there's an immediate need, the people available can attend to the immediate need. Having to table all the agendas.
I mean, we're all right here, right?
The addresses
now.
They arise. That's all there is to it. Consensus when it arrives.
This proposal we just
approved, I want to make it clear to the city that no matter what they do, if all they come back with is people in front in favor of this timeout, that's not going to stop us from doing what has been authorized already, which is to remove the case to federal court. It's got to be done tomorrow. If all we got is three people, that's
okay,
not
good. I want the mayor.
What they should come back with, what they should come back with is a written commitment to put in a stay or a suspension of the case. Tonight, we need that. Otherwise, the case is not going to be here. It's going to be over in San Jose.
And what happened was the city came back with no such commitment. No emergency meeting was called. Lane didn't change his position at all. And yet 3 days later, what I regard as a rather, perhaps the word gullible is a little strong, but overly hopeful activists from Occupy Santa Cruz are still sitting around chatting with Don Lane, which is okay, except they're acting as though he's sort of the leader of the group, and they really have to sort of bow to his experience and authority, and if he has, important things to say, well, they want to hear it, and he can lead them forward and so forth in certain ways. That was the impression I got listening to this group. They were sort of presenting proposals for his reaction and so forth, as though... I don't know. It's hard for me to... I feel so frustrated, with the process that... with the impression that one can negotiate with city council until one is in a position of some power when they aren't presenting anything to negotiate with other than the threat of removal, which is what they've had that for months anyway, because it's illegal to even camp in San Lorenzo Park. They don't even need an injunction. It just becomes an additional tool for scaring the activists, and it seems to me that's unfortunately the motivation from which a lot of this Occupy Santa Cruz negotiating is happening. It could be different. It could be done differently. It could be the activists instead could present to city council a set of concerns it wants the council to address and set up some clear procedures and say, if you want to talk to us about sanitation problems or crowding problems or violence problems, we'll be happy to talk to you, and we're happy to kind of work out solutions together. But we're not interested in doing so under the threat of the gun. Remove the injunction. Remove this bogus permit that we didn't apply for and we don't accept, and acknowledge the fact that there is a protest here that's going on, a de facto protest. And they, of course, aren't doing any such thing. And instead, people are, I'm afraid, succumbing to the sort of unwritten and unspoken agenda that the city council or that Don Lane has as a politician and as a as the incoming mayor, who would certainly like to be the guy that everybody regards as the peacemaker, but the kind of peace he makes, he can always say, well, I went to this Occupy Santa Cruz and I offered them all these wonderful things, and they said no, they just can't be worked with. And he has a more credible position for this because he has, in fact, gone to Occupy Santa Cruz. They're not offering anything particularly, but he's been willing to jawbone them for quite a while. I'm going to skip ahead from this discussion in order to give you some reactions that people had after this meeting. Again, this is a Monday meeting. One of the first lengthy discussion with Don Lane, who did show up the day before, for the first time actually speaking in the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly process. He said he'd been to a few earlier ones, but this was the first one he spoke at. And I'm queuing it up here just to forgive the squeal. We should be there in a moment. A little squealing here. We'll be there in a moment. And this is what we call working on the fly. But, I have nothing against working with the city in terms of dealing with real problems. But the kind of literal crap that they presented to the courts is of a piece with what's being done around the country to smear the protests. Call them poo-poo and pee-pee and needles and violence when they're isolated instances of these things. And things are generally being run certainly better than they are out in the wild in homeless encampments. And generally, there are no really lasting problems around these kinds of issues. But they are used to inflame the public and justify massive police repression. And the same thing, if it's not being prepared for here, it's strange that they are even raising the issues in this way. I mean, it certainly looks like it's a part of the general process across the country. And Lane certainly knows this, and I hope that the activists who are doing, who are so eager to talk to Lane and so eager to present resolutions supporting Lane's idea of a permit, which the Occupy Santa Cruz proposes, which then, of course, people would be responsible for financially and legally, and they would have to start policing the area in ways that the city could hold them liable for. I mean, I think that's one of the, was one of the original concerns about this whole permit process, plus the point that this is a protest, this is an occupation, this is a essentially a way of saying no business as usual. At the same time, in terms of the way the government is operating, not in terms of the way the community is operating. The community has complete access to all resources and facilities. They're not being blocked. It's not a question of any of that. It's a question of the government's rules being essentially set aside and say we've got some new rules now that have to do with the will of the community. Now let's hear a little of this protest before the call-in from Palo Alto.
I think he just answered it.
So, and then when you got up there to the front of the building at the courthouse, what did you see?
The sheriffs were going around, poking at people's tents, picking it up. They started taking down the Easy Up. That's funny, down the Easy Up. Anyway.
How many structures did they take down?
They took, I think, 3 tents, and they took 1 Easy Up and the tables, and then they started going to the GA stairs, and they started removing signs and chairs, things that were not directly related to lodging at all, and backpacks.
I'd like to add, too, that I offered to move the tables for them to get them off of where they thought they weren't appropriate, and they became aggressive, told me to step back, and I asked them why they were taking the tables, and they refused to answer.
This was the discussion of a sheriff's raid that happened the previous night, the same night that Lane is schmoozing and talking, the next day Lane is schmoozing and talking peace, but the county sheriffs are removing not just so-called illegal camping equipment, such as tents and sleeping bags, but they're removing protest materials like tables and chairs and also signs, political signs. And in other cities, like in Berkeley, Councilmember Chris Worthington is denouncing this kind of behavior. You don't hear a peep out of Vice Mayor Lane on this issue. Not a word. Not a syllable. So, again, here's a report on what apparently happened the night before at the in front of the county building. Though I got to say, for the last two nights, the sheriffs have been quiescent. They have not taken any property that I've heard of or issued any tickets. And I may be wrong about that. There may have been one ticket issued, but I think that it's been more quiet. But prior to that, there have been a total of 20 serious citations issued for the crime, essentially of protesting and falling asleep at the protest or covering oneself up with a sleeping bag or sleeping in a tent near the protest. Not with the intention of establishing a permanent place to live, but with the intention of being present and generating support and showing one's determination to change government policy and seek a redress of grievances.
Did they confiscate the tables?
They confiscated the tables, yes.
How many pieces of furniture, all in all, would you say that they confiscated? How many tents?
I'd say 3 tents, Easy Up, and 2 tables.
And I would guess a fair amount of chairs. I'd guess 5.
Yeah, that's right. 5 chairs.
So.
How many signs?
Oh, I would say like 100. They just cleared our GA steps of all the signs and all the signs that were to the left of the steps.
Did they offer anyone the opportunity to take the signs, or did anyone try to take the signs?
Casey tried to get his sign. He said he was very emotionally attached to it.
And what happened?
I don't think they gave it to him.
No, that's Casey took the sign.
Oh, and, he just took it?
Yeah, and held it, and they left it.
Oh, good job, Casey.
Did they made no offer to give the sign to the owners of the signs?
No.
Did the owners of the signs attempt to claim the signs?
Some people did try to come and get
and
the
what
signs.
What happened when they did that?
The police just took them and put them in their bags.
How many deputies were involved?
I think about a dozen.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe
did
a dozen.
Did they leave any receipts for the signs?
No.
Any apologies? Did they show a new constitution which said no signs, perhaps?
They took our friend's glasses, too. Yeah, they took a pair of reading glasses.
Maybe they realized it was the wrong prescription.
I think they thought that maybe our friend was lodging behind them.
Teach him a good lesson.
He's trying to live behind his glasses.
Well, so my glasses were an implement of living and therefore appropriate to be seized.
That's, yeah, apparently so.
How long did the whole thing take?
Half hour?
Half an hour, I would say, yeah.
And who led the charge? Was Lieutenant Christie running around doing her thing?
Oh. It was Lieutenant Pursley, a.k.a. Lieutenant Liar.
And why do you call Lieutenant Pursley Lieutenant Liar? How can you say that?
Because when I went with Noah later on to try to see if he could get his glasses, because the poor thing couldn't see anything, Lieutenant Pursley said that we wouldn't be able to get our possessions until like 10 a.m. today or something like that.
He said a few days.
A few days?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they wouldn't tell us where they were taking our stuff to either.
Well, and first of all, he claimed that they did not have glasses. He checked with his...
Yeah, he checked with his inventory. He checked with inventory, and they did not take any glasses.
Perhaps the lieutenant needed glasses.
Perhaps.
More than one set.
Perhaps. And also ears to actually talk to people, because then one of the other sheriffs volunteered, oh, yeah, we totally did take some glasses. And then Lieutenant Liar was like, oh, maybe.
Backed up and...
I don't think... He still said, I don't think we have them. We don't have any glasses. But they went inside, and they checked, and we stood on steps waiting for them.
About 40 minutes.
We waited for a while... Mostly I was just watching Lieutenant Liar.
It was right after the whole occupation seizure stuff?
Yeah, and so we were still just doing rounds and seeing how they were regrouping, if they were going to come back and try to clear out more of the area. And so I was standing up on the steps watching him, and then he came out and some other people did, and we asked again about the glasses.
You know, I was stumbling about in the dark, wondering.
Yeah, poor thing.
Couldn't see
poor
who
thing.
Was who.
Sticking a cigarette in his eye. He just couldn't get it together.
I must have made a funny kind of thing for a police video. Yes.
But then they said that they were looking for them and would get them out to us in a couple minutes, which was more like an hour or two.
So, anything else happened that was of note? Did anybody lose any medication? Was there any ID taken? Anything of that sort?
I did notice that they parked a truck in the middle of the road, and I believe that's some sort of traffic violation.
Police are allowed to do that sort of thing.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
There are public servants. Keep that in mind. You seem to misunderstand the role of the deputies here.
I guess I do. I don't know if I do, actually, but...
probably not.
There was a girl that had her ID and her backpack was taken, and her ID was in her backpack.
And do we know the name of the girl?
Abby.
And had she been able to reclaim it? Is it the come back at 10 o'clock thing? Or?
I don't know. I haven't talked with her yet. I haven't had a chance.
You've got to do something with that cigarette because I have a serious cold. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So,
I did hear that when everybody started chanting, whose street's our street, whose steps our steps, the cops kind of decided against taking the dome and they ran inside. Inside the doors.
So now, there was something about the doors being blocked at some point. What? I heard something, some report on that. That we're going to come out from the county building through the doors that are rarely used, the fire entrance that actually is usually the place in which the General Assembly is often held in front of.
I don't think there was anything about that. The only thing with blocking the doors is when they retreated back into the building through those doors, we went up to the doors and we were yelling.
So they retreated through the door.
It felt like they retreated. It felt like a retreat, yeah.
How many deputies were there, remind me?
12 or so.
Men and women, or was this mostly a penis group?
There was one token female in there.
I see. So was she any different in the manner in which she treated people?
No.
So she learned her trade well.
Yes, she's definitely fitting in with the penis crowd.
Indeed. Penises forever, as I say.
And there was also, Lieutenant Liar is also their token black man.
Aha! Uh-huh. Yeah. African-American.
You know, yeah.
Equal opportunity repression.
Yeah, they're showing, you know, we accept everyone. Why can't you guys?
Any other thoughts you want to add about what did anybody learn anything from this raid? Any implications for people facing such situations in the future?
We're going to have to wait on that because, as you can hear in the background, that is an incoming call. Let's see who's incoming here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello, Robert. This is John Kilkang calling from San Jose.
John, it has to be real quick because we've got an incoming call from Palo Alto, I hope.
Okay, well, real quick. There were 500 people at City Hall today.
500 at San Jose City Hall?
Yeah, joined the Occupy protest down there.
Wow.
Mostly organized by the SEIU. And then I want to give a quick warning to you guys. There's a bill currently in the House called Stop Internet Piracy Act, which only one person, Bill Lofgren, was able to debate against the bill, which basically gives corporations and the government arbitrary power to shut down any internet site they claim is violating copyright. So if you want to sign the petition, go to my website, deepmovies.com, and there's already 700,000 signatures on the petition, but they want more. So go to that website, and you can sign the petition.
Again, you go to the website. Which website?
Peacemovies.com.
One more time.
Peacemovies.com.
How do you spell it?
It's like peace and war, peacemovies.com.
I'm having trouble understanding. Maybe the audience does.
Peacemovies, peacemovies.com.
Okay. Do you think any of those 500 at San Jose City Hall are going to stay and support the San Jose occupation or not?
Well, unfortunately, the tent got taken away in the last day or so. They used to be setting up during the day. I don't know why they take them away during the day now, but maybe they tried to stay overnight one time and they got taken away. But somehow they got all taken away today. So I don't know what's going on with the overnight Occupy.
If you get more news, give us a call back, John.
Yeah, I'll call you on Sunday with whatever I can figure out.
And email me that website again so I can, with my deaf hearing, actually get it together and understand it more clearly.
See if I can access my email from my phone and email it to you.
Thanks a lot, John.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. And hopefully we are going to catch Palo Alto 2 as they call in, if they call in. I did get an email right before the show that Chuck was going to call in, so we'll see if he does. In the meantime, let's hear the rest of this discussion Monday, the 14th, about a raid that happened, I believe, Sunday night, the 13th, or early Monday morning, the 14th.
They're going to face police repression, and their tactics are going to escalate until it gets to, which we've seen all over the country, to a very violent and possibly deadly force. And we are not backing down from this bullshit.
What kind of recommendations do you have for the Occupy Santa Cruzans?
Stand strong.
Stand together.
They're after your signs. They're after our signs, too, now.
That could be the basis for a nice First Amendment claim in court, I would imagine. Not that the courts have any particular sympathy for this kind of demonstration. What do people think of the meeting they just had with the Vice Mayor Don Gone Lame, as I call him, and Danette Hoosie Maker, or Shoemaker, is she known, and then the other, the superintendent, whoever his name was. What were people's feelings about that? Andy?
Well, they said the same thing they've said all along, which is they love free speech and they're in support of our right to assemble, but this is simultaneously as they're pressing this injunction to basically kick us out of the park and under threat of whatever legal means they have to suppress us.
Anything else? What was your thought? No comment, you?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a shit show.
Do you have any comments about the meeting with the Fuhrer? I mean, the Arch Fuhrer, the Deputy Mayor.
Off with their heads.
I missed most of the meeting. I did see a stern facilitating hand by Commander X. How did people mostly get their views expressed, do you think? How did that happen?
No comment.
It seems like people were getting their views expressed, but as we who have been occupying the space have seen during our GAs, a lot of times it takes a really long time to reach consensus, and Mayor Don Lame.
Deputy Mayor Don Lame.
Okay, and whoever else that broad was. They don't have time for our, messy consensus process that takes
a... Actually, it's a vice mayor, not a deputy mayor. I think you get a deputy police chief, but a vice mayor.
Wow.
Well, they are paid officials, not Don Lane so much. But Danette Shoemaker is one of the highest paid officials in the city, and she's paid $200,000 a year to declare various... She has declared the entire... levy area off bounds. She closed the city council at night so that there are signs posted. You're not allowed to walk in front of City Hall at night with a sign off the sidewalk into the City Hall grounds.
It's actually after 10 o'clock at night, or when half an hour after the city council closes, which was an extraordinary measure undertaken a year ago to stop the protests at Peace Camp 2010, even though the only tickets they were getting were for sleeping. There was no violence. They had no prosecutions for drug use. One guy was picked up as a sexual offender who hadn't registered. So, whoopee-doo.
He's a nice person, but I'm afraid, the same might be said of various other officials and repressive regimes throughout the world that, you know, they are amiable enough.
And the same can be said for the sheriffs and the cops. You know, I bet a lot of them are really nice people when they're out of uniform.
Possibly out of office might even be a good idea.
Yeah.
We've been talking with...
Joel.
Gabriella.
Angel. So we know who you are, so to speak.
I know.
The evil Gabriella has finally exposed herself, sort of. Thank you both. I mean, thank all of you. Any word from one of the local, not deputies you were telling us about, Gabriella, but the actual police officers?
Actual police officers.
Actually, at the same time as the Don Lane or Gon Lame or the vice mayor had his meeting with people here, there were three or four police officials.
There were three police officers and then deputy lieutenant of some sort. He was in an actual suit. And they were just taking a leisurely, sunny stroll through camp, just checking it out.
Chris Place Department.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you heard a conversation.
I heard a conversation. A camper asked two of the police officers, so we have until Wednesday until you're going to start kicking us out. You know, presumably they're thinking about the injunction. And then the police officer responded, oh, no, it'll be sooner than that.
Maybe he was kind of a whimsical joke, perhaps.
And this kind of police threat, which has reduced the size of the camp considerably, I think it used to be over 1.125 tents, I counted. Now I think it's down to 70 or 50, seems to be a regular tactic under Deputy Police Chief Steve Clark, or certainly one that he uses. And it's a form of kind of the propaganda that the police use to frighten people into abandoning protests, abandoning their rights, and so forth, in order to, quote, avoid trouble. This story that Gabriella told us, this account, which she claims she overheard, is one I heard from other people, too. Not that they necessarily overheard it, but the story kind of went around. Of course, today is Thursday. Wednesday came and went. There's been no eviction of people from the campground. At least the campground that's down on the San Lorenzo Park area, as distinguished from the one right around the corner, the actual Occupy site. You would think there'd be more political flack to go after people who are sleeping right with their protest signs and engaging in general assembly meetings and organizing activist rallies and marches. But it's being done, and this is the way they perhaps the authorities justify it, under a different jurisdiction, the county authorities, the sheriffs, as distinguished from the city authorities, the police, who police the park, or along with the Parks and Rec Rangers police the park. Although I haven't seen a Parks and Rec Ranger around lately. I guess their department has been cut back. It goes to the credibility of the Santa Cruz Police Department. They're going to do this, they're going to do that. But in fact, what they do is often quite different from what they say. Of course, it's somewhat similar to the city council and other authorities. And people who are in positions of power and who aren't accountable can do that. They can just say one thing and then go do something else. Of course, that's until people reclaim their power and say no thanks. And the roar of the people becomes so loud that they have to stop what they're doing and either start doing what they should be doing or get out of the way so others can do what needs to be done.
A police officer, or perhaps a friendly warning.
Yeah, it's not very funny and it's not very friendly, whatever it was.
Candor surfaces underneath the friendly exterior.
Do you say so?
Perhaps. Thank you. You had a thought?
Yeah. I was just saying I'm looking at the camp right now, and about an hour ago, I couldn't make a real accurate guess as to how many people have left, how many tents have left, but it's considerably thinner since the police made their little walk through.
It looks like the area that's on this side of the teepee as we stand here, the Occupy Santa Cruz side, hasn't really been reduced much. But there are large open spaces now on the other side, and I count 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, maybe 40 tents over there where they used to be. There were 75 two or three days ago.
Three days ago, I counted 100 tents.
On the TV side?
In total.
I counted 125 at one point, but I was doing it in the dark, and I was estimating.
Also, same. And I guess it's hard to make an estimate of how many there are now, but there are considerably less.
Well, it ebbs and flows. And how many people are there who are actually interested in holding their ground if they... I mean, we saw Occupy Oakland got driven out last night, right? Isn't that what happened? And similarly with Portland, the most militant groups. So I guess maybe there's... I thought, well, maybe there is some point in playing diddle-dee-doo with these city officials if you can use it the time to get the public on your side. But it's always dangerous when you do it with the public officials because then you start giving them the power to characterize what's going on rather than pointing out that they are full of shit and what they're doing. So, I don't know.
And as far as how many of these folks will hold their ground, these folks have been holding their ground for a long fucking time. And whether or not they're sleeping right here, they're going to be holding their ground outside on the streets long after this is over. They are occupiers.
Or slipping from place to place. The police don't mind if they do that. They just don't want it to be a public defiance of legally constituted authority.
Yeah,
you know what that means.
That is very clear.
Again, we've been talking with
Joel.
With standing by and keeping an eye on the whole thing.
Gabriella.
Thank you. Apparently it was a bubonic plague epidemic in the campground. Is that correct, Gabriella?
Yeah, bubonic plague or ringworm or some sort of nasty parasite. There was apparently word of that, but the officer didn't have any actual evidence that that was going on. But I mean,
It could be. Spreading around.
It's definitely worth spreading around. Let's talk about it to everyone. Let's make signs about that. Maybe the sheriffs won't take those.
Did you hear that from an officer?
The Channel 8 man was asking the police officer questions, and that was one of the questions. You know, we heard that there was a ringworm epidemic. Do you have any knowledge about that?
And did you catch how the officer responded?
The officer said, we don't have any evidence of that.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Talking to Steve Plaich, who's prepared paperwork for the upcoming injunction hearing. What's up with that, Steve, at least with respect to your case?
I'm afraid I can't talk about the pending litigation.
Indeed. When will we be able to discuss this?
At some point tomorrow, when we determine our status in federal court.
Any tips for campers who may be wondering what to do?
No. Just be safe.
How nice. Again, another exemplary statement, very helpful from Steve Plaich. Those signs have been taken. There are still some new signs. Police are puppets. They throw their weight around whenever they can. When it comes down to it, they're just people, peons who answer for the ones with wealth and political power. Their job is to enforce inequalities, to keep some of us on the streets while others live in penthouses. The problem isn't just the cops, but the whole system they impose. And there we have a tent which says, Return to Huff. Whose tent is this, Becky Johnson?
I have a suspicion who it belongs to, really. But Huff is providing the service for people who are fearful that their sleeping bags and tents will get seized by the police as to how to identify them to get them back. And so Huff has offered as a service that they can put that information on there, and if it's seized by the police, we will happily go down to the police station and collect it for them.
That's very sweet of you to offer that on behalf of Huff without a consensus process, Becky John.
Yeah, I apologize for putting your home phone number on there.
Indeed, it is the Huff line. Thank you.
Thanks.
Talking with
James Smythe.
And James, you had some rather caustic comments to say at the end of the meeting.
Yeah, well, the main thing that I wanted to say was I felt like the representatives of the city government had an hour and 20-minute attention span. And after that had ended, they decided that they had to go. And I think that's really telling because we've been holding this forum for over 2 months now.
What was your sense about the direction the meeting was taken, if anything, in terms of requesting the city to drop the injunction? I think that kind of went without saying, but was this the beginning of a fruitful negotiation process?
I think so. I think that it was based around consensus, and that takes a lot longer than the processes that the city officials are probably used to or haven't had any experience with.
It's interesting that James Smythe would say that. I don't know him very well, and I was very impressed with his earlier speech, which I haven't played on the air, although I think I've recorded it, so I may go back and play it. he was very skeptical of the city council's credentials and their way of proceeding, particularly of Don Lane. He raised a number of issues. But notice that in spite of all his criticisms, he still remains hopeful about the process itself. The same is true with Commander X, who I really kind of seriously disagreed with in this last round with the Don Lane approach, where he was giving a kind of... He was masterminding and trying to lead it without you know, while at the same time claiming not to be a leader, wanted to represent it, though the General Assembly said you can't represent and so forth. Anyway, we have a caller. This could be Palo Alto calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I...
Can you hear me? I think I can hear you. Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
You're having trouble hearing me?
No, I think I can hear you. This is Chuck?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Chuck, you're calling from Palo Alto, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, so I... sorry for the confusion about the phone number. I was able, I guess, to redirect you, which I appreciate.
No problem.
Yeah, so... what's happening in Palo Alto that's occupying your attention? Are you outside yourself? Are you do you have a house? Are you homeless? What's your story?
I'm unsheltered. I live out of my car. For the first year and a half or so, I was homeless here. I slept in my car. Now I sleep outside at a place called Copperly. It's a campus that used to be a high school, and homeless people live there in vehicles and out of vehicles. And I also sleep usually part of the night at a coin-operated laundry that is supposed to close at 11, but it doesn't close ever. And I usually sleep there part of the night or sometimes the whole night.
Are you the only one who does, or are there a lot of folks who do that?
There are quite a few people who live out of vehicles and, you know, without vehicles, just camp out on the ground or at the railroad station or something.
Uh-huh. How about at the laundry?
At the laundry, I was the only one. Now, the other night, there were three of us there. There's one guy who's usually there and me. That's usually all that's there.
So as it grows, it looks, you know, it may be blown up as a site, you know.
Well, maybe. It's been available for quite a long time, and it doesn't seem that popular. So one night I went there, and there was a woman asleep on the folding table that I usually use, but it's not that popular for some reason, and I'm not sure why. Maybe you are exposed. I mean, anybody could walk in there any time and, you know, do whatever they want to you, and you wouldn't know about it till after they did it.
And how long have you been... using the laundromat as a sometime residence?
I'd say about a year and a half.
Wow, and have you been molested at any point? Have you met any interesting people? How's it been there?
Not molested, not bothered. Sometimes somebody who works there or the owner will come in and throw me out, but that doesn't usually happen. One night I woke up and I know it was the owner because he was emptying the change out of the machines, but he didn't bother about me and I didn't bother about him.
So there's really a policy of tolerance in Palo Alto, at least at the laundromat, and also more broadly around this issue that I called you about and that I've been reading about in the papers, the Mercury News, the Palo Alto Weekly, I guess, and the other Palo Alto papers, the fact that Palo Alto, unlike other cities, because of an 80s court decision, has no law criminalizing people who sleep in their vehicles, right?
Right. I don't know about the 80s court decision. That may be part of it. I think at least part of it, if not a large part of it, is the people in Palo Alto have an attitude of helpfulness, tolerance, brotherhood. There's one big part of the issue is this issue of magnetism. People, as you referred to, in other cities, there are bans about living in your vehicle, but not in Palo Alto. And one of the fears that people in Palo Alto have...
The magnet theory.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Everyone will come to Palo Alto to live in their vehicle. That was the same argument used in Miami when Miami lifted its sleeping ban in 1999 under court order in the Pottinger decision. And it was disproved by the fact that social service agencies reported no increase at all in requests for social services, which you would have expected would happen if a lot of people had come to town to avail themselves of the thrill of sleeping on the street.
Right, exactly. And as I pointed out, we our committee, community cooperation team, I assume you're aware of that, this group that formed last July of students and homeless people and community activists to fight the vehicular habitation ban. We met with the mayor and other members of the city council, and as I pointed out to the mayor, he was, you know, he mentioned this, we're, you know, a little, I would say his attitude is, and this is what he's, you know, been quoted as saying and has said, they're all Palo Altans, and therefore he feels some measure of responsibility in caring for people who are there, regardless of why they happen to be there.
You have a lot of confidence in this guy. I trust these politicians about as far as I can, you know, throw
well,
them. How I can heave on them, actually. You know, they'll say what they need to say to please the constituencies. But, you know, there are rare exceptions, but, you know, I'm not aware that what's the name of the mayor in Palo Alto?
Sid Espinoza.
And you know Sid from way back, your drinking buddies and that sort of thing, or...
No, oh, no, no.
Just kidding. Go ahead.
No, I'm new to the area. I'm here because my children and grandchildren live here, and that's why I came. But I must say, I mean, of course, I read about Palo Alto and East Palo Alto and knew a lot about them before I got here. But I'm 68 years old, and I've been protesting and, you know, arguing with authority figures for many, many years and many, many issues. And I understand very well, I think, what you just said, but I also don't think that's a good basis to proceed on. Even if it is the case, you have to proceed on the basis of, okay, I take you at your word, and then if you disappoint me, then, you know, then we'll see what happens. But I really do take him at his word. Not only do I have no reason not to, you know, no behavior that contradicts it, but there is, as I pointed out to him, this imbalance in the laws has existed for many, many years, and there's been no noticeable lemming-like rush to Palo Alto. It just doesn't happen. I mean, it obviously could.
In other words, it's been legal to sleep in your vehicle for three decades in Palo Alto, but the number of Palo Alto homeless has not substantially increased, at least from out of town, although you came from out of town yourself, but you had family there to begin with, right?
Right. Exactly. It hasn't increased, and, people who are homeless are not, not so... I don't want to say not so single-minded, but not so short-sighted as just to, you know, go. The truth seems to be that people can live in their vehicles in Santa Clara, Mountain View, other places, if they don't cause any trouble, if no one complains, if they don't stand out, that law is not enforced. And in Palo Alto, if the ban were passed, it would be complaint-based. So even then, you wouldn't be bothered, theoretically, unless somebody complained about you.
Or a police officer decided that in the course of events. I don't know if you can make it a crime complaint-based. I mean, that's what police often claim in Santa Cruz is the case. Oh, we only act on basis of complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not true in my experience,
right,
and from the interviews I've done with people. But I don't think you can even put that into a law because it... It means that gives private citizens the power to essentially enforce the law at their discretion. And I don't think that – I could be wrong about that, but that seems to me to be – that would be, you know
– counterintuitive.
Selective enforcement. It would give too much power to the heckler's veto, so to speak. The person who – the bigot's veto, the person who doesn't like something could run around and on his own say-so – hassle people. I'm looking at the Daily News as Palo Alto considers alternatives to vehicle habitation bans. Still hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. And I know that there was a meeting recently, I guess 2 days ago, of some sort of working group, a government agency, a subcommittee of city council, perhaps, that was considering, they're being pushed by some real estate and neighborhood groups to, for the first time in 30 years, set up a ban on sleeping in vehicles, right?
Yes. Well, this push, this drive to have such a ban, we found out, has been going on since 1996. And every few years, there's been another, effort that looks like it's going to be passed soon now. But it's never been passed. It keeps threatening, but never happening.
I hope you can hold it off again this time as well.
Speaking of the meeting you mentioned, there is the city council has two subcommittees, policy and services, and then finance. The policy and services is what our issue, this ban, came under. And the policy and services subcommittee established the working group that you mentioned. And we did meet, the 15th, 2 days ago, yes, and in the morning. And then that evening, in the city council chambers, the policy and services subcommittee met, and there was a hope that we would have some real proposal to give them, but we didn't yet. We're still working. So we just, made a progress report. But what was truly mind-blowing, a number of us went to the meeting and spoke, and after we spoke, the city council members who were, there are four of them that are policy and services subcommittee, they had questions and they made statements, and we were blown away because these were some of the people that we hadn't been able to get to meet with us, and the people that we thought were most conservative and least likely to be favorable to us. Well, we were all blown away because from the statements they made and the questions that they asked, it was clear that they were on our side, or at least not against us. This one man, Larry Klein, council member, we thought was definitely, like the head of the enemy camp, and he spoke last, and he said, sometimes the best way to solve a problem is to do nothing, and we should really consider doing nothing in this case. And boy, we couldn't have been happier to hear that.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I mean, are police cooperating? Because I know that they're harassing people like Tony Ciampi, or Ciampi.
Yes.
I'm not sure. How do you pronounce his name? Do you know?
Ciampi.
Ciampi. We've had him on the air talking before. He was, of course, tasered because he tried to get back into his vehicle after he'd been tricked out of his vehicle by two police officers. And he was able to get the charges dropped and has now been pursuing a civil suit, which I guess I'm not sure if it's being settled or not. You can give us an update on that if you know. But, I mean, are police stopping harassment during this period? I mean, from July to the present, you guys have been talking about and forming community organization to resist this conservative attempt to say, thou shalt not sleep in the vehicle near my house or any residential neighborhood or anywhere in town. Are police backing off?
Well, they, in all fairness, first of all, let me tell you, my phone, I'm talking to you on my cell phone, and it just gave me a beep, all charged. I'm in a motel. If you lose me, would you call me back?
I can't. That's the reason you need to call me, because it's...
Right.
But, we can do this again on Sunday and do a longer report. Actually, I've got to roll onto another subject, too. I apologize for, not being able to reach you earlier. What's your full name, Chuck?
Charles Jagoda, Jagoda.
Let me ask. I didn't really get an answer from you about have the police backed off, but
right.
Have the Occupy movement had some impact on this?
Well, sort of. Some of the people, some of the students at Stanford who are helping us are also part of a group called Outreach, Stanford Outreach. I think I'm not sure they actually have a formal name. And they go out and meet people on the street and And they're working to form another shelter for women similar to this called the Hotel de Zinc, which is an interesting program I'll tell you about if you want. But to answer your basic question, the police have not really been bothering us either a while ago or since July, and they really are not the enforcers. There's a community service officer. If you called up and said, "Is this vehicle parked near my house and it's annoying me and I'd like to complain about it," they would be the ones to come and put a 72-hour notice on the car, or she would, this the community service officer. So the interaction with the police doesn't happen that often. But let me tell you this about the police. We met with the assistant chief of police, Mark Venable. Can you still hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
Okay. And he said, and this relates to something you said earlier, that we know that you guys are not, you know, harmful, you're good citizens and all that, but there is the small group of troublemakers that we need this tool, this additional tool.
This is the endless the cry of the police in every city,
right,
around every issue where they want to use whatever force there and or, you know, laws they want to cook up. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. No, I agree with you. And we feel that, you know, it's very comforting to hear that the law would never be used against you, only against bad people who really deserve it. But that's a myth. That's the prelude to have you. So,
well, Chuck, let me ask you this because I'm going to roll on you shortly, and it looks like you're rolling on me. You still there? I think we just lost you. That was Chuck Jagoda of Palo Alto, who's working with a group, the name of it I haven't quite got down. Let's see. There's a story recently in the Palo Alto Daily News, which does mention it. It's been meeting since July to counter this attempt to draft a thou shalt not sleep in one's vehicle ordinance. We don't want no stinking homeless in their vehicles around here. And it looks like they're proceeding apace. You know, it's nice to hear he's getting positive verbal responses from city officials and police. I may have to ask an individual who's kind of crept into the studio and may have some commentary on this. Free, do you have any commentary about what you've been listening to here about the Palo Alto vehicular situation? I mean, let's put it this way.
No, I mean, you know, you can't really believe politicians when they say they're on your side. It's what they actually do and what they put on paper.
Now you do a Tuesday show and you've been, of course, covering Occupy Santa Cruz pretty persistently, just like I have, right?
A little bit, yeah. Which are archived at freakradio.org under the archive button, Free the Land.
I got to, you know, pick up on that. You've been telling me that for months, and I don't seem to. It doesn't get it through my head. I've tried to access, I think most recently, because you did a show that interests me on smart meters. And
that's up there now, yeah. It wasn't up.
It wasn't up.
We're lazy about putting it. You got it automatic or something. Your stuff goes
yeah,
right
yeah.
up.
I've got a volunteer over in San Jose who's been doing it for almost 10 years now. It's great. Thank you. Hats off to Tom Belote. I should say right now you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM in Santa Cruz. We've moved a little bit, but not much. And, you know, it's still freakradio.org. The phone number is still 427-3772. And we've got 50 minutes left in the show.
I did come in. I want to talk about something. It's you know, the county's the one that's been throwing the tickets out hard at the Occupy in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be going after the county on some of the things they do. And one thing they're doing is they do a lot of red tagging of people. And there's this guy out of trial today, Roy Kalar. His only crime was having too much junk on his property. He's got like almost 160 acres up in Boulder Creek. They're trying to take it away from him. They're fining him $12,000, $500 a day just for having some junk on his property that you can't even see from the street. They want to take away his property, put it in a receivership, cut down all the timber. There's some redwoods there for any environmentalists that'd like to stop this. Put up, I think, 30 units or something. I'm sure these are going to all be sweetheart deals to friends of people in power. And I think this goes on quite a bit.
You're speculating, though, about that.
I'm speculating about that, but they are taking away his property. I mean,
right. I know that I've had Jack Smith on. Jack's house was seized and red-tagged and up in Felton, and he's actually now being charged with some criminal drug stuff because of something that was found in his car. I haven't gotten the latest update from his partner, Angel. I hope to get some update on that at some point, but don't know what's going on with him. And then there was the case of a woman in Santa Cruz at, I don't know the street. It's up.
Oh, I know. Crystal Terrace.
Crystal Terrace. Thank you. She was Patricia, Pamela. She was, at first it sounded to me like a situation where she was hiring homeless people and the neighbors were a bunch of bigots and trying to run her off. Then I talked to a neighbor at length who I've known for 10 years, and he gave me all these details about her bizarre behavior, how she treated homeless people, how she dealt with the neighbors. It was pretty horrible. And I took a somewhat different view after having been, sort of propagandized by Chris. That was the name of the neighbor.
Penny was the woman, I believe.
And Penny, right. Penny.
I met her a few times. She was involved with the dog guy. The county was also trying to take the dog guy's property.
I think you and I, and she met once, and she immediately
didn't like, don't talk to Robert.
Yeah, she's very, had that about her.
But I don't think it's taking her property. I think they're renting it out or something, and she gets whatever. This looks like some kind of a plan. And also, he said he's going to be on our show next Tuesday, so we're going to talk about it.
Who was on your show last Tuesday?
That was Jim Ostrowski.
Oh, Jim. I used to call him Gentleman Jim Ostrowski back in the 90s. Yeah, he was an activist fighting in the courts for some procedural concern that I share. And actually, I stayed at his house for a couple of weeks back in the 90s, right before I went down to Santa Barbara.
He's a nice guy, to work. I'm hearing some weird sound. Is everything good? You getting feedback?
I don't know if we do or don't. Probably we might. In case you want to call in, 427-3772 is the call-in number. So, Free, what I want to do now is play some more tape, maybe get your comments. If you have any thoughts, feel free to interrupt and say, hey.
Yeah, well, they've cut back the bus service, so I'm here until 8:30.
Oh, dear. So it's sort of a shelter from a storm.
That's right. I needed somewhere to go to the bathroom. And, there's a potty war going on between Occupy and the city. The city won't open the bathrooms at night, and then they blame all the poop on Occupy.
Indeed. And Occupy keeps kind of catering to the excuses.
Exactly.
Caters to the excuses of Danette Shoemaker that, if we find poop there in the morning, and that means people don't. Well, you would, because if it's closed at night. I mean,
it's the city's fault. Any violence that's occurring is the city's fault. They're supposed to, police demonstrations and stuff.
Well, certainly the poopiness is, can to some extent be laid at the feet of the city or
absolutely
the bowels of the city, if you will.
That's what I was saying. If you see poop on your lawn, it's because the city's closed their bathroom, so pick up that poop, mail it to the city council.
Give it to Ryan, and he'll tell you that he's our mayor, and he should deal with that kind of shit.
Yeah, you can gold plate it and put it on a pack.
I think so. So, a lot of things are happening around the country right now, as I said, around Occupy's. Mass protests are coming out, and I think there was something in Santa Cruz today that as well, although I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I went by there about 5. There was the SEIC, the unions and stuff, were meeting with the Occupy. They blocked, they filled up the sidewalk, but I had to go to an anti-cop meeting at the Sabrosa, so.
Tell me about that. That's something, not much has been seen of Wes Modes, the infamous Sabrosa Cafe guy, free school guy. Doing this community control of police alternative.
Community safety.
I guess ever since he Patrick Lancelin went off on him at the Friday Guerrilla Theater some weeks back, he's never shown up at the, or maybe he has.
He's
he
in and out. He said he's.
He has shown up at Occupy because there hasn't been any Guerrilla Theater action, has it?
Oh, we have a phone call.
We do, but if you have any news, because, you just recently spoken to Wes, so. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Free and Robert. Hello? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Are you there?
It was John Pilking.
John, hello again.
Did you get my email?
Well, that's a good question. Let me double check, and perhaps I did, and perhaps I didn't.
John Colby, he does the records request acts, right?
No. John is an activist who's been working with a number of things, but he doesn't do public records act requests. Are you got someone in the room with you there, John?
Well, I have a heater going on, and hard to hear.
Oh, okay. No, it sounded like there was somebody else talking in there.
There's also a Green Party meeting going on.
Oh, okay. Let's see if I can find your latest email.
No subject should be the headline.
include the subject.
I'll take a look. But while I'm looking for it, what's in it I should be aware of?
Basically, I just was concerned because this bill, the Stop Internet Piracy Act, would allow corporations to blacklist websites, as well as the government to blacklist websites, even if they're suspected of possibly violating copyright.
Yeah, I think I've read about that probably through emails from other people, not so much in the media.
And apparently demandprogress.org has got 700,000 signatures on their petition to try to stop it.
Of course.
But unfortunately, Bill Loughran, my local representative here in San Jose, was the only person allowed to debate against the bill. Apparently a parliamentary procedure in the House of Representatives where they only allowed one person to debate against it, and they probably allowed a whole bunch of people to debate in favor of it.
Yeah, I see the website. It's www.peacemovies, which apparently you said repeatedly, and I still didn't understand, but now I do, .com, for those who want to check it out. And I appreciate your bringing me up to that. It sounds like your Green Party meeting is proceeding apace. What's the Green Party doing around Occupy?
We haven't started officially yet, but anyway, my personal position is that I will continue Peace Movies even if it gets shut down by the Protect IP or the Stop Internet Piracy Act. Arbitrarily.
Okie doke. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I will publish a newspaper and hand it out at San Jose State if I have to.
Well, good
but
for
I
you,
not
John.
Don't be shut down.
Don't be shut down. And, you know, I think, as I said, they may get 700,000 signatures on the net, but I think 70 people protesting would be a better bet. But,
right.
Okay. Know. Thanks a lot.
Talk to you later.
All right, man. So, you can email me at rnorse3@hotmail.com. And I see Occupy Santa Cruz protester ticketed. We have a story from, it looks like a Sentinel story with Becky Johnson, perhaps some commentary from her. Let's see. Oh, tip of the hat to Becky for getting in touch with Chuck there in Palo Alto. Thank you, Becky, if you're listening. Appreciate that. An activist at the Occupy Santa Cruz demonstration in San Lorenzo Park was ticketed Wednesday for smoking in the park. Ah, yes, I read that this morning. It doesn't say. And Santa Cruz police spokesman said, Santa Cruz police spokesman Zach Friend, but is he really?
Not my friend.
He's not. I don't know how much of a friend he is. A fight also was reported in the early afternoon, but no one was ticketed nor arrested. Friend said he's always. Friend is keeping us up to date on a smoking ticket in San Lorenzo Park. How nice. Yeah, I'm glad he's keeping. You know, I'm glad he's doing some serious crime fighting there. Sheriff's office said deputies did not cite or arrest anyone at the Occupy demonstration Wednesday. Authorities have said the main protest site will be cleaned in coming days on the Water Street Common Area of the Santa Cruz County Superior Court. The geodesic dome there remained Wednesday, said Sheriff's Deputy April Scalland. And, of course, they threatened that they would remove it on, a week ago Sunday, I think, was the first warning. So, yeah, that, geodesic dome is still there. And I noticed there was a lot of anger at recent tickets from the deputies. There's been chalking very kind of legible, coherent messages are being chalked on the steps of the courthouse that can be seen from the street. They're probably not as visible as the signs that were stolen by the deputies, but nonetheless, it's kind of impressive. I'm going to play some more tape from that area and also from other areas, and feel free to comment if you'd like.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Maybe you weren't one of the three no votes at the end of the process, right?
I was.
You were one of the three no votes. I thought you took a more critical view, but apparently you think the whole negotiation process is positive in its entirety?
I think that it is. I was just somewhat bewildered and definitely astounded by the clear disparity between the approach of the occupiers and the approach or behavior at the occupation meeting of the city officials.
And of course, what this speaker is talking about is the meeting with Don Lane that happened on Monday afternoon, the first of a series, apparently. He met again on Tuesday, and again he was meeting with folks today when I was there at Occupy Santa Cruz.
What did you think of the way it was run, the whole meeting?
I thought it was run fairly smoothly. I wasn't there for the beginning, so I can't say. It was definitely clear that the first issue, or the issue of sanitation, took way too long. So that limited the
Was anything
scope
actually
of the meeting
decided? I mean, did the city officials concede anything at all? Since, of course, Danette Shoemaker can decide on the spot to do whatever the hell she wants. Lane presumably can make personal decisions, but the city bureaucrats who run these agencies can decide immediately to open bathrooms, bring in other things, open up areas of the city that are closed by their own edict.
Yeah, I think that the whole... I think the whole bathroom issue is just a tool that the city officials are using to distract from the true issues.
Did they agree to do anything?
No, they don't think they have to.
They didn't agree to. Somebody said they agreed to open up, to put up porta potties or something. Was that agreed upon or not?
Yes, but that wasn't the city officials.
City officials agreed not to tear them, throw them away, as they or refuse them permission to be there, is what they'd previously done.
Right, that was my impression.
That was the one accomplishment so far that came out of this meeting.
Hypothetically, but nothing was put down into writing, and I didn't hear anything explicitly committed to by the city officials present.
They didn't say, "We you now have our permission to put in the porta potties."
Not explicitly.
What did they say?
I think that the city officials remained mute at the times when it behooved them to
If they could have made a commitment, they just declined to do so.
Yes, they avoided it.
We've been talking with
James.
And what James said remains true, I believe, 4 days later. They still, I don't think the porta potties have showed up yet, even at the campground. Maybe they have tonight. They weren't. They've been told they hadn't arrived by mid-afternoon. I'm not sure if that's the case. Maybe anybody out there listening on free radio, if anybody has a radio these days, can give a call, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Give a call to me, and we'll get a latest update. In fact, I may call the infamous and much belabored Steve Plaich, who I continue to chat with, even though he and I disagree. Hey, I chat with everybody. Chris and I, Commander X and I, have serious disagreements, and Ed Fry and I have notorious. We're all disagreeing here, and that.
You're living with Chris, right?
No, actually, I'm not. He's down at the protest. That's what he's doing. He's I occasionally.
Aren't you required by the court to be, you know?
No, well, I'm required not to. If I see a violation of his OR, I'm supposed to report it to the court, and I've seen no such violations. So.
Lodging's not included in that.
Lodging is not a violation of the court order, no. I mean, that apparently was made clear. So we should be getting a call soon from Ventura. Jay Lederman of Ventura, the attorney, is going to be calling in. He's actually Commander X's attorney in the federal case, as well as in these two Thou Shalt Not Sleep at Protests cases, or cover up with a blanket, the lodging law.
I have a legal update for you.
No, good. Go ahead. Before you do, anything happen to that community meeting at the Sub Rosa about the police?
Well, there was a demonstration going on up, at the Water Street Bridge. They were closed, so...
Could you have any report on that?
Like I said, I was only there right around 5, and there was a lot of people with signs on the sidewalks and stuff, but I didn't see anybody.
All right. People are taking action in a lot of cities across the country today.
Yeah.
That's really encouraging, actually.
I don't know if the students were part of the demonstration. When you get the students, then you can block the streets, because then you got hundreds and hundreds. Mm-hmm. But I think the unions and the Occupy didn't. But like I said, I took off.
But you have a legal update.
Oh, yes. In order to fight this, Ed is going to move it out of the local court.
He's going to try.
Yeah, well, he's already, $350.
He spent $350 to try to move it to San Jose Federal Court.
Federal Court.
It being the injunction which the city has foisted upon us at the same mm-hmm. time that Don Lane, who presumably voted for, at least didn't publicly oppose the injunction, is wringing his hands and talking about free speech and so forth.
They want to appear to be on your side while they fuck you in the ass. That's what politicians do. I mean, that's how they get those jobs. So he's and that's going to cause a delay, because courts are slow. So moving into that court,
about a week, I think, is what the.
Yeah.
Do we know if Barisoni's filed a response?
Well, here's the thing: is that Ed said
he's a city attorney.
The city attorneys were talking to him, and the earliest date that they can get for a remand back
is in January. So
really?
It's going to just extend it for a month and a half just on legal manipulation.
So, in other words, this whole thing has been delayed until January because it was removed to the federal courts.
Mm-hmm.
Or the attempt has been made to remove it.
That's the earliest date they can to get it back with a hearing on it.
So that hearing is necessary before the case can be dismissed and turned back to here.
Well, or who knows, you know.
Yeah, so that's I'm going to call Steve Plaich and get a definitive word. Steve,
well, he's also doing a separate case.
Yes, he is. And Steve is definitive, even when he's not entirely right, although frequently he is, you know. He's a lot on the ball. The man is a very avid researcher and writer, legally. Does a lot of writing and research.
Yeah. He considers me a nuisance.
And you are a nuisance.
Yeah,
but on the other hand, are you a public nuisance or a private
nuisance?
But that's
the thing.
You're an attractive nuisance.
He called me a nuisance because I told the DA he can't represent anybody. He got a little upset. But now he's being accused also falsely of being a nuisance by the city in their injunction. Because he would rather move it from the park. He stated that opinion several times, though.
He did, and that has also been proposed by Jonathan Gettleman, another lawyer who thinks that he wants to defend the case not so much by moving the campground as by making sure that nobody sleeps in front of the courthouse,
right.
So it can be kind of a
pure First Amendment
without any lodging. Mm-hmm. But we've seen throughout the country, you don't even need you to sleep there. They will ban you from there even if you're not sleeping if they want to move you.
Well,
at least other authorities.
Tougher constitutional.
You would think so, but you know the courts are unpredictable, particularly given our Supreme Court. I should say their Supreme Court, the Roberts Court. Well, actually, we're going to have an attorney coming on in a minute. Let's hear a little non-attorney stuff before that happens. We've got about 5 minutes. Here's some more diddly doo doopty doop from the. I think we're still talking Monday the 14th. Is there interviews around about Occupy Santa Cruz after Don Lane had a meeting with everybody and. Actually, I guess it encouraged people the thought that the vice mayor would come and talk to us. It was very impressive. It was just, oh, my God, royalty has arrived.
Thanks, James. Thank you.
We're talking with
Desiree Foster.
Desiree, we talked to you, I guess it was on Saturday morning. Again, on Monday morning, deputies came again?
Yeah, they did.
And that was this morning. What happened?
They showed up. And a truck pulled up, and they started taking all of our stuff, the Easy Up tarps. They took the tables. They took one or two more tents, I think just one. They started taking signs. They took our generator. They just took anything they could grab.
Did people object to this procedure?
Yeah, they did.
And how did they object?
We all started yelling and chanting, and we got really upset.
Did anybody say, I want that sign back, or attempt to stop the signs from being taken away?
Yes, they did.
And what was the response? To the deputy?
At first, there was no response. They just started loading them up, and then they kind of realized that by taking the signs, they were messing with our First Amendment right, and they stopped and left them.
Did they return the signs that they'd already taken?
No.
Probably a simple oversight.
Yeah, probably.
Probably. I mean, you know, if somebody had mentioned, I'm sure they would have put everything back.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, they have better ways that they can go about things. And, I mean, taking signs is just wrong. That's our freedom of speech, and they just completely took it.
I see one sign sitting on the grass, need ride south. I guess the other side of the sign, which is facing the street, has said something else, which might have something more effective on it. Well, Desiree, are they driving you away? Will you be, shall we say, intimidated from sleeping here tonight?
No, I won't. I'll be out here.
Desiree sleeps on. If you want a hug, just let me know.
Okay.
Thank you, baby. Give me the update, Abby. Somebody got a ticket, you say, tonight?
Yeah, last night. I don't know his name. He was sleeping on the center level of the steps, and he didn't wake up when people started yelling the sheriffs were here, and they walked up and ticketed him.
5:30 in the morning?
5:30, yeah.
We don't know what his name was? Or...
No, I don't know his name. I've seen him around a lot.
You were the one who got the ticket this morning on the steps, do you?
No, I don't know.
No. Next time, say, shout your name, or something.
Yeah, okay.
Fair enough. But you think he did get a ticket?
Yeah, he did. I asked him this morning.
Fair enough. Thank you. Who have we been talking with?
Abby.
Thank you, Abby. All right.
Can you rephrase that for me, Free?
I need a different drug.
You mentioned that there was a cease and desist notice served on the sheriff.
Oh, yeah. I just read this on the website. This is one of the better techniques I like. You know, it's always better to go on the offense than to just sit there and take it. Somebody had dropped by, I believe it was Andy, some things that just stopped harassing. I didn't really see him, but stop harassing us and destroying our rights. And this is a cease and desist.
It's kind of a mirror notice. The sheriffs are giving out this, thou shalt not lodge, get out of here.
Yeah.
And we're saying, you know, thou shalt not harass, get out of here.
They're actually claiming the county owns that property now instead of the public. Last year they never said that they owned it.
Indeed. Oh, well, they're moving forward. They're trying to...
We own this government. It's our government. We can take it back and get rid of all those bureaucrats and stuff we should
but
be
But will
doing.
We? That, of course,
that's,
is the question.
That's the difficult
we'll
part.
We'll see. It's... It may be happening. Let's hear some more.
A quick interview for Free Radio Santa Cruz, perhaps?
Huh?
An interview for Free Radio?
All right.
Okay. We're talking with Kevin. It is the, I think it's the 17th of November, with a rather kind of gentle-looking pussycat here on top of the change-making machine. Is this thing? Yeah, it's still a change-making machine in front of the former Borders, and it's around noon. How you doing today?
All right, same shit, different pile.
What's happening today, shitty wife?
My girlfriend's still in jail for some bullshit because she's pregnant and hormones raging.
And what is she accused of?
Battery.
And did she batter you?
Yeah, in front of a cop, but it happens.
You've forgiven her already. You're an abused spouse, in other words, and you're going back into an abusive relationship.
I'm not sure yet.
But you don't like to see her in jail?
Yeah, no.
Is there a bail, or is she waiting in OR? How long ago did this happen?
In OR.
How long ago was this?
About 2.5 days ago.
And have you been over to Occupy Santa Cruz at all?
Staying over there.
And the name of the putty tat is?
Shitty McKitty.
Shitty McKitty. Shitty, you want to say anything? She's looking over the machine. She's licking the microphone.
No, you don't want to say hi?
Meow. Meow.
That was me, folks, not Shitty McKitty. So, what brings you down to the mall?
Just trying to make some food.
Same. How's Pickens today? People have been giving out food and clothing, generous donations?
No, not so far.
Any tickets from police?
No. That's the one thing that's changed in this town is the cops messing with people down here.
Explain that.
That explanation will have to wait because I think we have our Ventura attorney calling in. Hi, we hope you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hi, it's Jay Lederman. How are you?
Sounds like we got some music in the background there. Turn down whatever it is. I guess you can't. Are you at a protest?
Echoes.
My goodness, let's all dance. Is this some sort of Arabic jihad going on? Hello?
This might be something else on the board here. Maybe the CD or something.
Could be. Let's check here. Let's make sure we've stopped this. All right, we're trying again. Hey there, caller.
Hey, Robert, it's Jay Lederman.
Yeah, I think, AJ.
I don't know what was going on there, but...
It's in the studio. I think I failed to turn off the right switch. Luckily, that has now been dealt with. We can no longer dance to the music as we talk.
Okay. I'm happy to do this for a soundtrack if you like.
I would rather hear you singing, frankly, and that would be interesting, particularly if it were protest lyrics. So what's been happening on this national day of protest where the Brooklyn Bridge is covered with these pesky protesters?
These pesky protesters? I don't know. I mean, I think it's that time that the country realizes that we are the 99% and we are too big to jail.
I like it.
Thanks. I didn't create that one, but I will take credit for it if you'd like to give it to me.
Okay, sure. You're the first person I've heard it from. Too big to jail. Well done.
Yeah.
So I know we talked with you and a couple of associates down there, and you were trying to coax them, or somebody was trying to coax somebody into actually starting an Occupy Ventura that was more than a sunny idea. Has that happened yet?
No. The occupation begins on the 15th of December.
15th of December, eh?
Yep.
December 2011 or 2012?
2011.
Good.
So,
couple more weeks of planning, and then that'll happen.
Too much planning, you know. It's interesting. I think a lot of the substance of the protests here could not have been planned for. It just happened because people began to coalesce into a group. In the studio with me is Free, a freestanding activist who's a legal eagle and an annoying one as well, I might add. He's not a lawyer. He's a man who I often argue with about the law. Free, say hello to Jay.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for helping out, Chris.
Yeah, pleasure.
So what's the story with the evil Commander X? Has there been any further developments in his scheme to destroy the county website here in Santa Cruz?
He's innocent of that, Robert.
That's what they say, you know, but nonetheless. I maintain my suspicions. Go ahead, Jay.
You maintain your suspicions.
I know the man has probably got some motive here.
You're bumped from the jury, pal.
You would do that, wouldn't you, Mr. Shyster?
You'd be the first one out.
That's why I never go to jury panels, because I know I'll always get disqualified.
But let the prosecution use up their quota on him, because they'll kick him out, too.
And everybody will kick me out. In fact, if they don't, the judge will, probably. So what? Any new developments in the case that you can reveal without destroying your client?
No, actually, there are no new developments factually at all. In terms of that case, I'm working on, the legal backbone that'll support the facts. But I'm still waiting for that 100,000 pages of discovery to come to me.
And there actually are 100,000 pages of discovery?
For a 30-minute interruption of a website?
Well, actually, no. That was a sort of... little bit of a gap. Initially, they had reported that it went down for 30 minutes. Then they reported that it went down for 18 minutes. And then the next day, they said, actually, we took a look at it, and it never really did go down. It just got a little bit slow for 18 minutes.
Slowing a website for 18 minutes.
How can you tell the difference when it's government? I mean, they're always slow.
Well, yeah. So, in other words, we're
talking about Commander X, who's... Who's a stalwart among many stalwarts of the Occupy Santa Cruz protest, who you can identify him by the three-cornered hat he wears and his red facial hair. The guy's a very saucy fellow.
He's a troublemaker,
for
sure.
He's a revolutionary.
I'll tell you,
I hope I'm not betraying any confidences, but at the beginning when we were, very cloak and dagger, when we were developing an attorney-client relationship, when he would call, I would have him identify himself as Thomas Paine. So I think he took the revolutionary seed that I planted, and it grew into a tri-cornered hat on his head.
Modest as well.
Well, Thomas Paine is a saint in my book.
Paine is had a lot of common sense, as they say.
Two pivotal feature in two revolutionists.
That's true.
That is true, but...
Jailed by the French, however.
Almost put to death.
Yeah. An interesting fellow went back to England and, ended up dying. There were eight people at his funeral.
Mm-hmm. Well, no one knows where his bones are.
Indeed. I think that his grave was desecrated. But we're getting into too much history here, you guys. So, Jay, what's the story? You're planning to come to town and defend Commander X, not just in federal court for... allegedly slowing down, the 18-minute slowdown. It's kind of like the 18-minute gap in the Nixon administration.
Right.
That was the tape that Mary, what's her name? I can never remember her name.
We're getting into history again, Robert.
Indeed. But he also is accused of illegal lodging, which is now becoming a hit charge on the hit parade of the sheriffs. There have been more than 20 citations for 647E. Have you researched this particular code section at all?
You know, I actually sat down to do it the other day, and then the phone started ringing and the email started going, and I still have the screen up for research, but no, I haven't. It's been years since I've worked on a 647E ticket, because quite frankly, I would think that something really has to break inside you as an officer before you really go ahead and write someone a 647E ticket. It's like, you know, you grew up, you wanted to be a cop, and you went to the academy, and you wanted the action, and there were going to be homicides, and there were going to be robberies and burglaries, and you were going to help, you know, get cats out of trees, and you were going to be proud and magnificent in that uniform. and you're writing tickets for unlawful lodging to First Amendment protesters. Mm-hmm. How bad your life must be.
Now, are they writing...
It's got a nice pension, though.
Are they writing 647E tickets in Santa Barbara, or is that... Because I know people have been arrested there at the Occupy Santa Barbara protest.
Yes, okay. Since we've talked last, then, now I've been to Occupy Santa Barbara, Occupy L.A., and today I was at Occupy San Luis Obispo. So you want to start with Santa Barbara?
Sure, why not?
Santa Barbara is fully busted down from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. They come, I think it's 10 p.m. They come through at 10, and they'll write tickets, both very similar to Santa Cruz. They have a little municipal code section that they'll write up, and they'll also write a 647E ticket. So a gentleman I was talking to last week actually happened to have them on him, and he had, you know, he had the sampler platter. He had one from column A and one from column B, one local ordinance and one 647E.
But it's the same crime, right? I mean, lodging or sleeping, I guess.
Double jeopardy.
Isn't that overcharging in some way? Either
lesser included?
Well, you know, it might be. Yeah, I don't know that they're really lesser included, but I'd have to
see
the elements of it. But one of them's for being at a park past closing or whatever, and the other one's actual lodging.
Uh-huh. And so how many people have gotten tickets like this in Santa Barbara?
They've actually given out a ton, I don't know what he meant by a ton. I wasn't prepared to be questioned on it, quite frankly. The guy I was talking to actually had gotten 9 himself, and he said that the other night, and the other night being probably about a week and a half ago now, I think they wrote somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 or 12 of those tickets just in one night.
You know, are there attorneys in Santa Barbara who are defending these folks?
No, not really.
Huh.
That was one of the reasons we went up in outreach to them, because we really do have a bunch of attorneys that are ready to go in Ventura and kind of no action, whereas they have all kinds of action in Santa Barbara and no attorneys. So we're a good match.
So public defenders, I guess no cases have gone to court yet, right?
No. They take about a month to get in there. They write the ticket and the first appearance is about a month later.
And that isn't, has anybody gone to jail? I guess there were some arrests in Santa Barbara, but are people continuing to come back, stay there after 10 o'clock, get more tickets, stay there, get more tickets, and so forth?
Yeah, there are some that were doing it, and then, I mean, eventually I think they clear them out by force once they give them the ticket. It's not my understanding that anyone actually went to jail. I believe by arrest, they mean if they wrote tickets, but I'm not certain at all about that. I was actually supposed to go back last night with the other Ventura folks that went up there for the kind of, you know, we're calling it a meet and greet, because I don't know what, you know.
Can you hear it?
I don't know if we have authority to call it a working group or anything like that. So
you're providing legal assistance to Santa Barbara gang up there.
Yeah, at some point I'm gonna do that.
I've been advised.
I'll be back up tomorrow. Come to think of it, I'll drop in on them and see what they need.
Now I've been advised. My constant advice on these cases is for everybody to get a public defender, and then maybe one person to have somebody like yourself, and then everybody meet in a sort of a coalition of sort of a circus of attorneys. What do you think of that strategy? Is that one that you tend to favor or not?
No, that is the strategy I favor. That's actually what I was hoping was happening in Santa Cruz, and we could put together a meeting sometime around, like, December 20th, when I was going to be up there anyway, like December.
Well, I know that
we had talked about that.
National Lawyers Guild attorney or referred attorney Laura Anderson, who I talked to this weekend, was she didn't really want to work on the injunction, which Ed Fry apparently successfully got into federal court to.
Hey, Ed, all right.
Yeah, I'm not sure if, you know, where it's going to lead or whether it will be dismissed very quickly, but according to Free here, who's in the studio, as mentioned before, we have until the nearest hearing date is January, right?
To get it remanded.
So that means the whole process has been substantially delayed, which is, I guess, in a way, maybe it provides cover for the city to say, oh, we can't do anything, and so we can't really arrest these people. And, in fact, of course, they could move in tomorrow and move everybody out based on the park closure law, the camping ban, and so forth. So you went to any comments about the Occupy Santa Barbara? I was asking about arrests. Did you say there have been there? They continue to arrest people, or are they just not just ticketing them to death and just sort of, you know, is it becoming
a citation for a misdemeanor is technically an arrest.
Sure, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a custodial arrest.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any custodial arrests. Like I said, I was supposed to go back up last night, and talk more about that, and also talk about they have a great appetite there for a federal injunction.
Can you hear?
And I just wasn't able to meet them last night. Obligations around that.
Well, that's something I wanted to ask you too, because there are cities where people have gone to court in search of a real injunction. I think Steve Plaich here, one of our local activists, who's the only named party in this, the anti-protester injunction that City Attorney Barisoni has kicked our way, he is preparing an injunction to stop the nightly harassment by the deputies under 647. Has that been done anywhere else in the country, or am I again jumping the gun on you here?
No. In fact, they've done all kinds of things like that, different types of injunctions in different places. And let me see if I can get this right. There were early successes in Cleveland, Cincinnati, Nashville. They got a CRO through, I believe, the end of January on arrest. It really looked like it was going to be a wonderful display of victory. And then Sacramento started the tide of defeat. And we saw there was Sacramento and Dallas, and there was one in Florida, a fairly bad defeat. I think it was Clearwater or something. Of course, New York, two days ago, a very, I think, poor and cowardly decision by that judge. All around there's been some.
It's been a mixed bag.
Before this. So, yeah, it really is a mixed bag. And ultimately, I think the question's going to have to be resolved by the Supreme Court whether this unique form of protest, you know, fits the time, place, and manner restriction that are the only limits that can be imposed on First Amendment speech.
Because the manner is critical to how they're conveying their message.
Well, it is, as is time. I mean, that's the thing, is it has to be a 24-hour occupation. And the city's saying, well, what's the matter? Can't you protest between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m.? And they don't. No, the answer is no. No, it's not. The idea of an occupation is, in fact, an occupation. It's like, in San Luis today, they've San Luis Obispo. They've done it exactly the opposite of how we did it in Ventura. They took their tent, popped it down on the front lawn of the courthouse there, and they had an occupation, and they worked out their General Assembly issues and all of their, you know, details from there, whereas we're working backwards and not getting it done in Ventura. But it was wonderful in San Luis, and that's how it's done, and that's what an occupation looks like. It's 24/7. It's a presence. It involves a tent. The tent is the symbol of the occupation.
Mm-hmm.
It can't take any other form. This is a unique protest in history, in that it requires a 24/7 presence, and it requires that symbol, that tent. That's the symbol of the occupation.
Now, just a minute, Jay. Let me speak up for the law enforcement authorities here. You don't need a tent. I don't think the authorities have any problem with people sitting shivering in the cold, perhaps protected by a heavy coat or maybe even a blanket, but let's not get carried away with that.
Oh, you can't bring a blanket in this town.
Well,
that's a
you
charge.
Know, it's a good question whether a blanket would constitute lodging. I think Linda LeMaster is being accused of lodging because she had a blanket and she goes to trial in December, but maybe, you know, that was an error on the part of the deputies. You can be at a protest all night and you don't need to have a shelter. You can walk up and down with a hand warmer, possibly, or maybe you can go and sit in your car for a while, then come back. You don't need to have a structure at night to protest. That sounds to me like you're getting into zoning codes there. What do you say
to
that, there, Jay?
I think you are failing to distinguish an ordinary protest from this unique movement, which takes the form of an occupation. And again, that's what's so unique about this, is that it has to be an occupation. It's we are sitting down, we are reclaiming public space for public people, for all of us, mm-hmm. and we're not leaving mm-hmm. until we see some appreciable change.
Well, now hold
that,
it now, an that occupation.
Does call, that an occupation in this format does call for tents.
Well, you know,
it's
the same thing.
Speech.
Same thing could be said about the sit-ins of the 30s. It's all very well to say, well, this is a protest. We're sitting in, and you know. But in fact, the owners of these companies, I would imagine, had a perfect right to have everybody move in and arrest them, except they had their property destroyed.
Wait a minute, Robert. This is public land owned by the public.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. The point still is that.
No, it does.
The point is that there is actually, when you say, well, you know, we're this is an occupation now. This is a graffiti session. We're graffitiing all over the place because it's a new form of protest. Now, I don't know if the phrase "new form of protest" is sufficient to justify, again, speaking as a deputy sympathizer, this kind of blatant disregard for our state lodging law 647E, not to mention the city's sleeping ban and the park closure laws.
Well, Mr. Officer, I would take great issue with your illustration there, and I'll tell you why. Your graffiti example fails in that the Supreme Court has drawn clearly defined lines where speech transforms into unacceptable conduct. Right? For example, you can burn a flag. That's speech. But you can't go ahead and burn a flag in a dry forest at the height of fire season. That's
right.
Dangerous conduct that needs to be curbed.
There's a compelling state interest there, right?
Right. Well, there's a compelling state interest, but I mean, you can't. The protest runs afoul of graffiti laws, which are different than traditional speech forms in that it's conduct that's harmful to property. You're not harming the property by occupying it. You're just simply taking up space.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand the difference, Officer?
I understand the difference, but I also understand, for instance, if you don't mind, Mr. Protester lover, that in fact, suppose I want to occupy a building inside after closing hours, are you saying that the authorities cannot set closing hours and say, get the fuck out of our building, we want to clean the building up, you're not allowed in here, you don't have 24-hour access, we decide that, you don't. You don't like it, you want to protest, go outside, hang out with a sign. You don't have to come inside the building and protest. That's also an occupation, and it is trespass. I believe that's what we call it in modern-day English.
Right, and you see that there's a difference between trespass inside a building and what you said, go outside. Well, in fact, that's what
they're doing.
Actually, I'd like to point out that they... Well, the city council, here's an example of... It hasn't come up yet in quite the same way at the county building, but over at the city, it's illegal to be on the city council grounds after 10 o'clock at night in order to protect the grounds from the depredations of protesters and, avoid waking the sleeping birds. I believe there's numerous reasons for this. It's sort of a bird sanctuary. They've got a lot of bird brains on the city council. But the issue is, you know, you're not allowed to go into that area after 10 o'clock at night because it has been so determined by the authorities who are properly constituted and have the right to make such rules and regulations that it's only doable during the day. I mean, who would want to protest at night anyway? Get real, Mr. Attorney.
Well, first of all, is the place you're talking about, is that the place of the occupation?
No, it's not.
Last year's.
It's last year's occupation. It was actually their attempt. They drove us out by creating a new regulation.
That's right.
Which said you can't be here after 10 o'clock. I love it. You know, the First Amendment does not apply after 10 o'clock. It's an amusing approach.
And time, place, and manner.
And it worked with Danette Shoemaker leading the charge, even though actually they passed this law without even putting it through the legal process that it was supposed to go through, which is a whole different story. But
you're
yeah,
off topic, Robert.
Yes, I'm a bit off topic. But what, my point to you is that the city can regulate city and county property, provide for time, place, and manner. And one of the aspects of that is going to be, for example, you can't do it after a certain hour at night. And in a certain manner, that manner being you're not allowed to set up structures and sleep in them, which, for example, in Clark versus Creative Community for Nonviolence in the 80s in Washington, D.C., I believe it was resolved to the effect that you're not allowed to, you can, you, I guess they said you could set up a structure, but you couldn't sleep in it. That it could be as a demonstration structure, but you weren't, you weren't allowed to fall asleep in the structure. So the people who are getting lodging tickets are people they're finding who are either sleeping in these structures or obviously have been sleeping because they got their pillows there and all their other stuff. It's obviously not a model protest structure, as you might have found in, you know, the anti-apartheid villages of the 80s set up on some campuses, but not used for sleeping purposes. So so what about that, attorney for the so-called protesters?
Well, are you asking me if you have a problem in terms of distinguishing our movement from Clark while this winds its way through the federal courts?
Well, I'm saying that the established law is that thou shalt not set up these big, hairy structures all over the place, which are clearly having an impact on the grass, clearly taking up large amounts of space, and clearly involve making some fundamental and radical change to the grounds of the property, which the sheriffs and deputies are sworn as servants of the community to protect.
Okay. Well, here's why Clark is distinguishable from the tent, which I believe to be the symbol of the Occupy movement, is that Clark, the structures in Clark weren't the heart of that movement. I forgot the exact fact of Clark, but they weren't at the heart of the movement, whereas here it is. Keep in mind, you know, some of the basic tenets and reasons behind this, this protest, you know, involved epidemic homelessness, involved home foreclosures, involved a 10% unemployment rate, things like that, where people are taking to the street and putting up these tents, not because they enjoy a good bout of public camping, but everyone would rather be home on their couches watching tube, eating popcorn, right? You're out there because the economic structure is broken in such a way that your tent needs to remind them of why it's broken.
So would you say
that... He makes a good case, Robert.
You can set up a tent, but you're not allowed to sleep in it then. That would be the argument of Clark versus Creative Community for Nonviolence. And also I'd like to point out that, factually speaking, the people that I find doing most of the sleeping at these protests are homeless people who don't have a place to sleep. So it is, in fact, being used by a criminal, shady element to infiltrate what may be regarded as a legitimate protest movement with their drugs, feces, urine, and violence. So there.
Well, I can handle those.
Not to mention their ringworm and their leprosy. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's the feces. My, oh, my. No, I mean, again, the tent is critical because it speaks to the eviction of the homes, it speaks to the foreclosure, and it speaks to the epidemic problem of homelessness, and it speaks to the 40 million Americans living at or below the poverty line. And again, we didn't have that in Clark. Now, am I optimistic that our oh-so-wizened Supreme Court will speed in that manner? So, no, not necessarily. I haven't really found, Chief Justice Roberts and his friends Thomas and Scalia and Alito and Kennedy to be real, you know, get in a tent and get out there and protest type folks. But I think they'd be wrong to decide it to not distinguish it from Clark.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you make of the arguments by some that say, I've used the same argument you have. We only have about 2 minutes left. As a matter of fact, why don't you give us your final, anything else you learned on your trip, your Occupy trip, because Uncle Dennis is about to come into the studio.
Go ahead. Anything I learned on my Occupy trip. Yeah, quite frankly, everywhere has their absolute triumphs and their glories, and everywhere has their struggles, whether they're like Ventura and they haven't been able to get an occupation, or like San Luis where they just put it up, L.A. where they have really a thriving occupation. This is going to be a long winter, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hunker down for a long fight. Let's get dedicated to this cause because it's worth it. It's worth it. There are a lot of growing pains going on right now that I'm hoping everyone can work through and we come out the other side this summer.
We've been talking with Attorney Jay Lederman of Ventura, who still hasn't gotten his ass down to the courthouse to set up a tent himself. You could do it, you know, Jay. Get your butt down there and sit down on the grass, and about 15 people would probably join you pretty darn quick.
I understand that I can. Your listeners probably are not aware that I have a less than four-week-old child.
Oh, baby excuse again, eh?
No. I'm not using the baby excuse.
Leave him alone, Robert.
I'm using the wife will beat the crap out of me.
Oh, okay.
That's a valid excuse, acceptable in any court.
Yeah.
Very well, Jay. We'll have to let you off the hook for the moment. Yeah. But I've got my eye on you.
Yeah,
I myself, of course, am a perennial sleeper in my house, but I want you to, all protesters out there, to know as you're being arrested, I'm with you in spirit. Anyway, Jay, thank you for talking to us, and thank you for getting involved in the Santa Cruz situation, too. I know you got your hands full, and, you know, you're down there working in Ventura, and you probably have other cases as well.
I may have one or two other cases, but you know what? It's my pleasure to be involved. This is we're really on to something here. I'm glad that I could just be a small part of it.
Well, I hope that our listeners can hear more than I can on this crappy studio equipment. And Uncle Dennis is to blame. He luckily has just arrived, so I'm going to simply let him take over.
Well, if you attend Dennis's classes, you can make better ones.
Dennis's classes. What am I, some sort of a seven-year-old student, a feckling boy? Anyway, Jay, thank you for staying tuned and, staying with us, and thank the rest of our listeners for staying tuned. And, hey, hopefully we'll get some updates from you, and if Dennis will stop distorting my voice with his questionable maneuvers in the studio.
If you turn the high frequency up on the board, it's going to feed back, Robert.
See what I mean? This is what I have to deal with every 8 o'clock on Thursday. Anyway, thank you, Jay.
Well, ignorance of the operating principles of the radio station does not constitute a defense.
All right. That's enough, you guys. Jay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You got it.
And caller, we have about 15 seconds for you to say something. Go ahead.
It's your intrepid reporter from Occupy Santa Cruz.
Oh, God. Okay. Make it
oh,
a...
God.
Steve, what have you got
Uncle
to say?
I just wanted to say hello to Uncle Dennis. The only reason I called.
So do you have any reports on... we've heard from Free that the case can't be heard until January. Is that right?
For remand?
Who told him that?
Ed did. The city said that they... Can they get the GA to consent to an earlier trial? Good luck on that one.
Yes. Anyway, Steve, any reports? I know you've been hanging around protests, hanging around here, hanging around there.
No, actually, I was out at an Aptos doing that RV guest program presentation to St. John's Episcopal, which I'll tell you about at some point.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that maybe on Sunday if you can call in.
Yeah. And are you going to be around town later or are you going out of town?
I can meet you over at Occupy Santa Cruz. Where are you?
I'm
at Occupy Santa Cruz. Why don't you meet me at Joe's?
I'd rather... Cree has a question.
Did they close the Water Street Bridge at any time today?
No, they didn't.
All right. Well, I would rather meet you there if I could, because I should probably we can walk off to the side and find you a secretive spot where we can be not transparent at all.
Oh, great! That suits me perfectly. I'll see you there.
All right then. Bye bye. And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up
Thank goodness.
3 hours of mindless, nostalgic music from the ever-uninformative Uncle Dennis, who actually may have some interesting things to say about his pals and the animal rights and Earth First movements, you know, all the, you know, veggie power and all that kind of thing. So I'm going to leave it to him to, well, educate those of us who are still educable and to, of course, drink his customary ale or beer or whatever the hell it is.
Triple
Belgian style ale. Inception. Is that some sort of a sexy thing? Inception? Contra Inception?
No, it's protected Conception. From inception.
Protected from inception. Yeah.
Only in Texas, though.
I'm going to let Dennis take over now because it's time for me to be a moving on, for my boot heels to be a wandering.
Get your junk out of here. We're going to bring the bulldozer.
And I think that that could be my cue to hit the road. Thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Back again on Sunday at 9:30, or maybe even sooner, because Thomas Levitt has...
Change the combo to 0000. You can't get in.
And we're hearing all kinds of threats, so I'm going to have to go now. I would stay longer, but I'm being threatened here. In any case, we'll talk to you again. Thanks for being with me.